what will be the headline for Imran Khan's latest speech, which he actually packed off or passed off as an address to the nation? It wasn't. It was basically a campaign speech delivered from his office with the flags, formal flags of his country, etc., behind him. Now, a possible headline for this, I would suggest, would be "Me, Imran Khan, and my discontents with America." Because a lot of this was critical of America, attacking America in one place, naming it, but generally saying that this is a foreign power which wants me out. And then he gives his many reasons. And where is the inspiration for that headline came from? Let me also get that clear. Remember the celebrated book by famous economist, Nobel laureate Joseph Stiglitz, "Globalization and Its Discontent." So some of Stiglitz's critics, noted economists themselves, they said the book should have been actually called "Joseph Stiglitz and His Discontents with IMF," because he had worked at IMF. Now, similarly, here is Imran Khan, who has actually quoted America. Just the other day, he was meeting Donald Trump, sounding buddy-buddy, and he thought Trump understood what was going on, and he was making this big pitch against India. And that was just after his long speech at the UN General Assembly, which in his view, or in the way he structured it, was a big, spirited, rousing defense of Islam and criticism of Islamophobia. And in fact, blaming critics of Islam even for many of the excesses that are carried out, acts of terrorism that are carried out in the name of Islam. At that point, he had no issue being such buddies with America. But right now, he thinks America is behind all his problems. Now, this speech, if I were to analyze the full 42 minutes, 35 seconds, I can divide it into three sections. One is, I would say, about 25 minutes out of 42.35, he's talking about himself, how great I am, how self-made I am, how I never needed this job of the Prime Minister, how I never needed to be politician. I have the money, I had the fame, I had the lifestyle, everybody knew me, I knew everybody. And you know, he's made some fame for himself lately by saying, "I know more about India than anybody else does. I know more about Kazakhstan than anybody does." That's been his favorite line, whichever country he goes to. And he's used some of those lines in this speech as well. So a lot of it is about how great I am. And he says, look at other people. Koi parchi leke leader ban gaya. That means somebody was made a leader by the army. Koi inherit kiya. Uska maa baap kuch the. So a lot of the politicians in the subcontinent are from political families. So he says, I had none of that. And then he also says, koi aadmi General Jilani ke ghar mein sariye laga ke ban gaya. Now that is a reference that veterans of Pakistan beat, veterans of the Pakistan beat will figure out. The story goes that a young Nawaz Sharif was spotted as a likely promising politician in Zia's times when his father had got the contract for building the house of General Lieutenant General Jilani, who was Corps Commander Lahore. And to build the house, he would send his sons, particularly Nawaz Sharif, the older son, to help out with constructions. And they also had a small steel foundry business, which later became Pakistan's biggest steel producer. So that is a crack at Nawaz Sharif, that he was going to fix sariyas in General Jilani's house. And General Jilani noticed him and recommended him to Zia-ul-Haq, possibly as a promising politician in his scheme of party-less democracy. And that's how he became Chief Minister of Pakistan's Punjab. So he, in a way, takes a crack at both, not just Nawaz Sharif, but also the Pakistani army there. That also tells you that he's at odds at this point, not just with America, but also with Pakistani army. And that comes out in a couple more places as he goes along. Now, after his long preamble, where he says, I needed nothing. And he says, most people, you realize, and that's where you see where some of his problem comes from. His problem comes from his incorrigible class consciousness, that I am of a certain class, everybody else is of a lower class. And as we go along towards the end of this episode of Cut the Clutter, I will also tell you a little personal story about this. So please hang on. So he says that most politicians, you just think about them. Nobody knew them before they became politicians. So what he implies is, that people come to politics for fame, for position, for power, for money. He says, I had all that. In spite of that, I came to politics. I did not have to come to politics. So first of all, this shows a very poor appreciation of democracy, because in democracy, self-made politicians, a commoner can become a chaiwala, as we say in India, a chaiwala can become a prime minister of the largest democracy in the world. That is the beauty of democracy. Democracy doesn't mean that politics should only be done by those who are entitled, who have everything and who have nothing to gain. And so they come down and do a favor to their people by saying, look, I have everything, but I'm making such a big sacrifice by becoming a politician. Politics in democracy is not run like that. Politics in feudal systems might be run like that. Politics in democracies does not run like that. But I told you, Imran Khan has a class issue for which I have a story to tell you. So stay on with me. So he says that he had this fantastic career in cricket, which is the one thing which is absolutely true among his claims. I had this fantastic career in cricket. Then 25 years back, I decided to come into politics. I didn't have to, but I decided to come into politics because my country's situation was so bad. So I built a new kind of politics. Initially, everybody laughed at me. He says, 14 saal sab mere upar haste rahe. For 14 years, people were laughing at me. And the fact is, people did laugh at him because the first time he contested in an election, he contested in 5 seats. Pakistan has 5 provinces. So he contested from 1 seat in each province and lost in all 5. And that was the time I remember I was on a flight between Islamabad and Lahore, and those were used to be tiny Fokker aircraft which went up and down a little bit with the air pockets. And sitting next to me was Imran Khan's old bowling partner, Sarfaraz Nawaz, who was by now his big critic and who had joined politics as well. And I asked him, just in a conversation, I said in Punjabi, I said, what's wrong with Imran Khan? He's contesting from 5 seats at the same time. And Sarfaraz said to me, oh, the problem ehoi hagi. ਜਦੋਂ ਕ੍ਰਿਕਟ ਖੇਡਦਾ ਸੀ ਤਾਂ ਵੀ ਸੋਚਦਾ ਸੀ ਸਾਰੀ ਟੀਮ ਮੈਂ ਹੀ ਹੈਗਾ ਦੈਟ ਹੀ ਹੈਜ਼ ਆਲਵੇਜ਼ ਹੈਡ ਦ ਸੇਮ ਪ੍ਰੋਬਲਮ ਈਵਨ ਵੈਨ ਹੀ ਪਲੇਡ ਕ੍ਰਿਕਟ ਹੀ ਯੂਜ਼ ਟੂ ਥਿੰਕ ਦੈਟ ਆਈ ਐਮ ਦੀ ਐਂਟਾਇਰ ਟੀਮ ਐਂਡ ਯੂ ਸੀ ਸਮ ਆਫ ਦਿਸ ਕੇਮ ਆਊਟ ਈਵਨ ਇਨ ਹਿਸ ਸਪੀਚ ਆਫਟਰ ਪਾਕਿਸਤਾਨ ਵਨ ਦ ਵਰਲਡ ਕੱਪ ਬਿਕੋਜ਼ ਹੀ ਮੇਡ ਇਟ ਲਾਈਕ ਏ ਗਿਫਟ ਦੈਟ ਹਿਸ ਟੀਮ ਹੈਡ ਗਿਵਨ ਫੋਰ ਹਿਮ ਸੋ ਹੀ ਮੇਡ ਇਟ ਅਬਾਊਟ ਹਿਮਸੈਲਫ ਸੋ ਹੀ ਇਸ ਗੋਟ ਏ ਬਿਟ ਆਫ ਦੈਟ ਪ੍ਰੋਬਲਮ ਵਿਚ ਸ਼ੋਜ਼ ਹੇਅਰ ਆਲਸੋ ਸੋ ਹੀ ਸੇਸ 14 ਈਅਰਸ ਪੀਪਲ ਲਾਫਡ ਐਟ ਮੀ ਐਂਡ ਪੀਪਲ ਸੈਡ ਵਾਈ ਪੋਲਿਟਿਕਸ ਬਟ ਆਈ ਕੇਮ ਇਨ ਐਂਡ ਦੈਨ ਆਈ ਬਿਕੇਮ successful. And then he gives his ideological and philosophical rationale for coming into politics. He says the Holy Prophet said that kufr ke andar, that means when infidels run a government or a system, it can still survive, right? Kufr ke andar phir bhi nizam chal sakta hai, lekin zulm ke andar nahi chal sakta, which means a regime of the infidels can still survive, but a regime of injustice cannot survive. So he says that I came in to bring in justice. And then he says something that Muhammad Ali Jinnah, the founder of Pakistan, never said. He said Pakistan's basic slogan was Pakistan ka matlab kya? La ilaha illallah, which is the Islamic kalma. Qaid Azam never said that. Although, to be fair to Imran Khan, when he says that most people come into politics because they are nobodies and they come into politics for fame, power, money, he's careful. In fact, I was listening carefully that how does he handle the Jinnah issue. And he's very careful, so he's also smart. He says, Qaid-e-Azam Muhammad Ali Jinnah, wo politics mein aaye. But uske aane se pehle, he was already India's foremost lawyer, combined India's foremost lawyer. So he had fame, he had money, etc., etc. In spite of that, he came into politics because he wanted to set up this state. But certainly, Jinnah never said, Pakistan ka matlab kya? La ilaha illallah. That's a latter-day innovation. Now, he again says that our holy people had said that Allah has given us wings, right? Allah has given us wings. So why are we crawling in Pakistan like ants? We have wings, we should fly. And then he goes back to Allama Iqbal, Muhammad Iqbal, and says that the whole conception that Allama Iqbal had of the Muslims and Pakistan's Muslims as Shaheen, the eagles or the hawks. That means that we are expected to fly, not crawl. But we've been crawling like ants. In fact, I counted about 4 mentions of ants, and then I lost track after that. So you can figure out how many of them are there. Then he says that there was a time when Pakistan was a model state in the Islamic world. In fact, across Middle East and Southeastern Asia also. He says Malaysia's prince was in school with him. I don't know whether he was or not, but he says so. He says princes of the Middle East, Arab countries used to come to Pakistan to study. Pakistan was a model state. And then Pakistan got humiliated because Pakistan made many mistakes. And Pakistan then became a kind of a liability state. And that happened because of Pakistan's politics and Pakistan's rulers, which is what he had come into politics to correct. And that is the reason he said he wanted religious education so people, Pakistan's young people, could understand better the ideas of the Holy Prophet. Then he goes on with his usual bane stuff. In fact, I will also share with you another article I had written from Pakistan while covering Pakistan elections. You know that series I write, Writings on the Wall? So I'd done one of a set of writings from Pakistan in that series. And that series, in that article also, we had noted that his whole style was that me captain, you my team. So vain he sounded. See the headline of that article also. So that still comes out because he says, my whole idea was that Pakistan has been bending all this while. I'll never let Pakistan bend, and I will never bend before anybody. You know, anybody means, I don't know whether it includes the Chinese or not, but nevertheless, let's carry on. Then he says, I know India very well. Some of my closest friendships are in India. Because of cricket, he qualifies. Then he says, the US, I know the topmost politicians in the US system very well. England, he doesn't say UK. He says, England, it was my second home. I have lived there, which is true, which is factually correct. And he said that having learned about all these places and all these people, he was taken aback when General Musharraf, etc., just after 9/11 happened, they were so willing to go along with America in their war on terror. And he talked about this meeting where he says General Musharraf summoned top political leaders, including him. And he said, "Ye America ek zakhmi bhalu ki tarah hai. It's a wounded bear. And unless we help them, they will come and attack us and destroy us." And he says, even from that day, on that day, and since then, I've been opposing Pakistan joining the war on terror. And then he gives us a little history, his own version of the history of the Afghan jihads. I'm saying jihads plural deliberately. He says the first time the Soviets came in, we were drawn in because Americans and others wanted to fight a jihad against the Soviets. And he said, we helped them. And we then trained a lot of these people in our frontier areas, most of the Afghans, and then to fight the jihad, foreign fighters also came from the Middle East and elsewhere. They were all trained. They were all housed in Pakistan's frontier because Pakistan was part of that jihad along with the Americans. And then he says, once that jihad was won in 1989, in 1991, the Americans had sanctioned Pakistan. Now, what he doesn't tell you is why Americans had sanctioned Pakistan, because that is when the US Congress had refused certification to Pakistan that it was not close to making a nuclear weapon, that Pakistan was a nuclear weapon-free state. 1991 was a turning point. 1991 is also a time that we have talked about in the past when the Pakistanis sent India under VP Singh a nuclear warning, saying that we are in a warlike situation right now. If there is a war, we'll use a nuclear weapon early in the war to open the war. And that is around time when Benazir had upped the temperature with that jag jag mo mo han han kar denge, and she had just been fired by the army. So as a response to that, because now it had become impossible even for Pakistan's backers in Washington to continue insisting that Pakistan had this quote-unquote nuclear virginity, that they refused to give the certificate, and that's when the sanctions started. So he said sanctions started, and after that, after 9/11, they came back again. And he says, why did all these terror groups rise in Afghanistan and Pakistan? Because all this while, we had told our simple, God-fearing tribal people that they are jihadis, you help them. So they were still helping them. And suddenly the Americans came in after 9/11, and they got us involved, and we had to tell the same tribals in our tribal regions that no, they are not jihadis, they are bad people and we have to fight them. And in the process, our own tribal people were getting killed and they were becoming victims of drone attacks. And that's what led to the death of 80,000 Pakistanis. Now, he is counting, but he does explain correctly that many of these groups then turned on the Pakistani state, and that's when suicide attacks, which he calls in Urdu khudkushi hamle, they started, and that's what extracted a big toll on Pakistan. So he said, because I was opposing this, I was even dismissed as Taliban Khan. I was called all kinds of things, but I was never going to accept the Americans playing judge, jury, executioner, and that's why the Americans dislike me. So he's now leapfrogging over time, because when he went to meet Trump, it was like Americans were the best friends, and he had rediscovered American friendship for Pakistan. So he says on 7th or 8th of March, his government received a cable from Washington. Now, as I read in Pakistani media, it's a cable from the Pakistani ambassador in Washington saying that he met some American officials who said, as long as Imran Khan is there, US-Pakistan relations cannot improve. Now, he then goes on to say that I produced this cable at my cabinet, also at my National Security Council. I've shared it even with top editors in Pakistan. And that cable says it already anticipates that there's going to be a vote of confidence in Pakistan. How do they know? The Americans. That means they plotted it. And if Imran Khan loses, then America will, his words, forgive Pakistan all its misdemeanors. If Imran Khan wins, then for Pakistan, they'll be held to pay. Now, we don't know if the cable says all that, but that's a cable he's again flourishing in his speech and is talking about it. That's got him a lot of criticism within Pakistan from good people, smart people, saying that, look, why are you, one, destroying Pakistan's diplomatic relations with America forever? And second, why are you disclosing what should be state secrets in public just for the sake of your politics? Then he has to also explain why are the Americans suddenly that much more angry with him, that they want his head now. He says, because I went to Russia. I went to Russia on the eve of the Russian invasion of Ukraine. And Americans think, or they've been given to understand, that that was my personal decision. He says, that was not my personal decision. That is something I cleared with my cabinet, with my service chiefs, etc., etc., etc. But I'm being victimized because I dared to go to Russia. So he's also that way inveigled himself into the Russia-Ukraine-European crisis now. Once he's done with America, he turns on his opponents. That is the three stooges as he describes them. Nawaz Sharif, Shahbaz Sharif, and Bilawal Zardari. Bilawal Zardari or Rafi Zardari, if you want, you can add Nawaz Sharif, Shahbaz Sharif and make it one. In which case, you will also add Maulana Fazlur Rahman, who is the chairman of the Pakistan Democratic Mahaz. Although, having called him Maulana Fazlur Rahman once in the same speech, he corrects himself and he says, nee, Maulana nahi, wo Fazlur Rahman. So in fact, Maulana Fazlur Rahman is somebody that he also refers to as Maulana Diesel generally in his speeches, because the insinuation is that he was involved in some major diesel smuggling activity on the Pakistan-Afghanistan border in the past. Now, this is when he starts quoting from many books, and I counted three. I think there was one more reference which I'm not able to catch, although I played the tape slowly, but I'm not able to catch the reference accurately. But three books he talks about. The first book he talks about is The Way of the World, A Story of Truth and Hope in the Age of Extremism by Pulitzer Prize winner Ron Suskin. In that book, on page 92, in fact, the references I checked, in that book he says there is a reference to a young politician, namely Bilawal Bhutto, talking to his mother, Benazir Bhutto, who is telling him details of her bank accounts, illegal bank accounts overseas. And this is a conversation being picked up by international intelligence agencies. So he says, all my opponents are people that foreign intelligence agencies know everything about. He said, they know everything about me also. I don't know whether it is such a good thing. But he says, they know everything about these people. They can always be blackmailed. The next book he quotes is Barkha Dutt's book. I presume it's a book titled Stories from India's Frontlines, where he says that Barkha Dutt also said that Nawaz Sharif was stealthily meeting Modi in Nepal to hide the fact from his army. And he said, I would never need to hide anything from my army. Nawaz Sharif is a coward besides being corrupt. And the third book he quotes is something that I found on my bookshelf. That is Bob Woodward's book, Obama's Wars, in which he says, Bob Woodward quotes Zardari is saying that I don't care how many people die in drone attacks in Pakistan. And he says that's when this is being said by somebody under whose reign 400 drone attacks took place in Pakistan. So in conclusion, he also goes back to history a little bit and he says people who are opposing me, that is the Sharif family and the Bhutto family, they are like traitors like Mir Jafars and Mir Sadiq of the past. And he reminds us that Mir Jafar is somebody who betrayed Nawab Sirajuddaulah in the Battle of Plassey. And Mir Sadiq is somebody who apparently betrayed Tipu Sultan. Just a little factoid, something that I'd mentioned the other day. Great-grandson of Mir Jafar was actually Pakistan's Governor General and a top leader, that is Major General Iskandar Mirza. So I promise to tell you a story in conclusion of this episode of Cut the Clutter. So this is a story about an interview that I had with Imran Khan in 1993. In the winter of 1993, when I was spending some time in London as a research associate with the International Institute for Strategic Studies, I figured that Imran Khan was in London. I'd known him a little bit earlier, just from covering a little bit of cricket once in a while and being a cricket fan. And that is when a book had come out, and I find it on my bookshelf. And this is a book by Ivor Tennant, who is a British English cricket writer. And this book is a biography of Imran Khan, like an authorized biography. Now, in this book, Imran Khan made a confession or a revelation or whatever you call it, or a claim that he had indulged in ball tampering. And he said, what's the big deal about ball tampering? Only when non-white countries are doing ball tampering, only when non-white countries have fast bowlers. So Pakistan had Imran, Waqar Yunus, Wasim Akram, even Sarfraz Nawaz before that. That just because we've got fast bowlers, the white countries are complaining. And he said that white countries have been doing it all the while. And he also made a reference to John Lever's incident, John Lever-Wesleyan incident, which Indian cricket fans are very familiar with, because he was swinging the ball prodigiously one day. I think it was at Chipok in Madras then. And Bishan Bedi, the Indian captain, had protested, but nobody listened to him. If anything, Bishan Bedi was victimized for it. And he says when white people were doing it, there was no problem. Now that we've learned to do it, they are complaining. So that had hit headlines. So I went to him for an interview. Now in that interview, it was a very nice interview. And you can see that interview. I'm sharing a link with you. You will also see a screenshot from India Today. In that interview, he said, look, nobody has a problem with me. Look at people of class, the Oxbridge types. And who are the Oxbridge types? He said, Mike Brearley, Tony Lewis, Christopher Martin Jenkins, who was a great commentator and writer, Derek Pringle. These are Oxbridge people. They are people of class. They have no problem with me. They understand where I'm coming from. Who has problem with me? It is people like Ian Botham, Alan Lamb, Fred Truman. These are the below stairs types. I, at that point of time, was innocent to what below stairs type means in the English discourse. So the interview got published, and Alan Lamb and Ian Botham both sued Imran Khan for libel in London. Now, the libel law in Britain is very, very, very tough. And he was sued because they said he's called us below stairs class. And that's when I figured out what below stairs class in English discourse is. So in older times, when rich British people, rich English people had people who did their cleaning up, who did their cooking, who did their household chores, they slept in that little place under their stairs. You see a typical British house with a staircase. So they slept below the stairs. That's why those domestic workers were called the below stairs class. Nicha aadmi hai. So he used that expression about those two. Now, there is a long story that followed, which I will not tell you in full. I wrote about it, so I'll share that link with you. Basically, both of them wanted me to come and testify in the court, in the libel court in London, saying that Imran Khan had actually said it. Imran Khan and his wife then, Jemima Goldsmith, they both called me, pleading with me to also go to London and appear in the same court and say that I had misquoted him, which obviously I had not. So we decided at India Today, where we had published that interview, that we will take an institutional view. We will not go to the court as any side's witness. But if the court summons us, we will go there and we will tell the truth and we'll turn over the tape of the interview and the transcript of the interview to the court. So all I did was, it was a tiny tape, one of those matchbox size or half matchbox size tapes. I put it in an envelope along with the transcript and handed it over to Arun Puri to be in the editor's custody, and that remained there. So I never went for that court hearing. Now, just in case you are curious, Imran Khan did win the case. I never appeared as a witness from any side because we said we'll not be any side's witness. And many years later, when mischievously at a cricket reception after IPL had started, somebody dragged me to meet these two gentlemen who I had idolized also as cricketers, Ian Botham and Alan Lamb, and said, look, he's the guy who did that interview. And they both cursed me. Of course, they cursed me in a good-hearted way, saying, if only you had come, we would have won so much money from Imran and given half of it to you. That was a joke. But I just thought I'd let you know, because what this story tells us is Imran Khan's deep class consciousness, that I am the Oxbridge type. I am the upper class. Those who come from the same class understand me. All those who don't understand me are chota people, below stairs class people. And that is a very good study into his mind.